On the second floor of New York City's Metropolitan Museum of Art, you'll find 15 galleries dedicated to Islamic art. And the Met is not alone. The British Museum in London, the Louvre in Paris, they're all investing dollars and space for glittering new galleries on Islamic art. Now, at a time when the meaning of Islam is so fraught, what exactly is Islamic art? What belongs and what doesn't belong in those galleries? Well, today we're launching a series about art and Muslim culture, past and present, and we're joined by NPR producer Bilal Qureshi. Welcome, Bilal.
Thank you, Adi.
So, Bilal, why this focus on Islamic art now?
So since the attacks of September 11th, there has been so much focus and debate around Muslims, Muslim values. Is there a clash of civilizations? Do Muslims believe in the freedom of expression? And museums and all this investment in gallery space has had to do with this desire to bridge that division. And we just sort of started thinking about what exactly is this term? Is it a religious term? Is it a geographical one? Is it a cultural term? And that was sort of the start for this series.
So did you come to an answer? I mean, which one is it?
No. So what it turns out is that Islamic art is a very traditional Western art historical term. And it has a very formal scholarship and academic background. And it's also been evolving in recent years. So I went up to the Metropolitan Museum in New York to actually see how the curators there think about this question.
Thank you.
And this is a sticker in case you want to walk around the museum afterwards.
Okay, great.
The Met's been collecting Islamic art since the 19th century. Its galleries closed for renovations in 2003, and they opened 10 years after the attacks of September 11th. Sheila Canby is the head of the department there.
After things like 9/11, after things like the destruction of ancient sites in northern Iraq and Syria, museums serve as a place where people can come to this idea of Islam through the material culture, not just through what they're being told all the time.
When these galleries first opened, they were part of the Near East Department. That became the Islamic Galleries in 1975. Now they're defined by geography, focusing on the Middle East, Turkey, Iran, Central and South Asia.
What we want to reflect in the title Over the Door is kind of what we cover and what we don't cover. Because, of course, there's a huge population of Muslims in places like Indonesia, but we don't have the art of Indonesia in these galleries.
Once you're inside, it's like traveling back in time to a lavish Arabian court. There's an intricately woven carpet that stretches 30 feet across a gallery, a carved Moroccan courtyard with a fountain at its center, paintings with details you need a magnifying glass to see. So much of the art has nothing to do with religion at all. Navina Heather helped plan these new Islamic galleries. She says when they began renovating them after 9/11, they asked themselves one fundamental question about the term Islamic art.
Do you think about it as the heritage of the Islamic world, or do you think about it as the Islamic heritage of the world? You see, there's a difference there.
The Met has definitely taken that second approach. The emphasis here is on connections, says Heather, on how trade with China, Africa, and Europe transformed Muslim societies, and vice versa.
Because you have now cultural threads that extend all the way from Spain to India in this period. You can see incredible little currents of exchange and stylistic influence travel along these lines. And it's perfectly believable that the modeling of a particular metalwork object at one end of this world resembles that at the other end of the world.
She points to a peacock-shaped incense burner from India that mirrors a piece from Spain. Miniature paintings designed for Indian kings that include Persian calligraphy and arabesque borders. Navina Heather seems to relish bringing these objects to life. She curated a temporary exhibition this summer of art from India's Deccan kingdoms, which flourished from the 15th to 17th centuries. She wove together a playlist of music, maroon and purple walls, mood lighting. The exhibition's subtitle, Opulence and Fantasy.
Sometimes when you're too Puritan about things, you can actually kill off the vibe completely, which is what we definitely didn't want to do. One of the important concepts actually in the Deccan is rasa, is flavor, is juice, is essence.
It's interesting you bring up the idea of killing the vibe, because I think that's unfortunately a thing that a lot of people perceive Muslims do, is kill the vibe. I mean, you know, there's something quite austere and puritanical about the way that Muslim societies are arranged, and perhaps that's because of how we think about them now.
Well, the interesting thing about the arts of the Islamic world and courts is that there is always a wonderful tension between the most austere traditions, whether they are simple black ink calligraphy on a very simple plain page surface, the beauty, the stark beauty of that, contrasted with a kind of opulence and a love for color, for texture, an imagination, a feeling for romance and beauty, some great music. So, you know, you have both ends of the spectrum. And to somehow be inclusive in one's thinking is the best way to go.
But as inclusive and inviting as these galleries are, it's hard to keep the crises facing Muslims today out of sight, says Munir Jiwa. He's a professor of Islamic Studies at Graduate Theological Union.
I love to go to these galleries and just relish in the beauty and the splendor of those galleries. And at the same time, I'm very mindful, especially because my daily work reminds me of it, of just how difficult it is to relate or translate that very beautiful aesthetic experience that one finds in a place like the Met to the realities on the ground and the very difficult and challenging present.
But that's not what the Met does in its Islamic galleries. Navina Heather emphasizes that she and the other curators there are art historians first and foremost.
We show things on the basis of their artistic merit, their rarity, and their historical importance. So we don't censor the evidence, we don't promote the evidence, we try to be strictly dispassionate about the evidence. The only place where we allow ourselves any passion is in the artistic joy and excitement of something that's beautiful and elevating and technically accomplished. But we don't get ideological about it, and I think that is something to keep in mind.
But as you walk out of the Met and you return to the real world, which has a lot less fantasy and opulence, you know, it's definitely striking that the formal idea of Islamic art ends in the 19th century.
So, Bilal, what has happened to Muslim artists? And I know I'm asking along a long timeline here, but what's happened to them since the collapse of these Islamic kingdoms?
And Adi, that was exactly the question for us starting this series. Islamic art is not a category you can apply to 21st century artists. You know, Muslim art and culture isn't defined by the same borders and geographical regions as it once was. And so many of these collections by Western institutions were started when there was a very different kind of interest in the East and in displaying the East. And so today's Muslim artists live all over the world. Some of them are religious, some of them are not. Some are making sitcoms in Britain, others are rappers in France, some are making digital art installations in New York City. And many of them are political because they've come up in a very political time. And actually, Navina Heather, who's the curator at the Met that you heard earlier, she actually said to me how much she admires these contemporary Muslim artists.
Most contemporary artists are very brave people because they actually are willing to take on these issues and not let their expression be suppressed. And if their voices were to be extinguished, the voice of the writer, the voice of the artist, the voice of the poet, and then the evidence of history, that would be a truly terrible, dark world that would descend upon all of us.
And so over the coming weeks, we're going to meet some of these people, and we're calling the series Muslim Artists Now.
Bilal, we're looking forward to it. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Adi.
That's NPR producer Bilal Qureshi.